Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Jesse Green here at the control panels as always. And today, as Christmas draws nearer, the new year is just around the corner, we start to think about what we're trying to achieve in 2019. And one of the things that comes up all the time is, you know, I want to do this or I want to do that, I want to set this particular goal. But in this particular episode, I'm super excited to be talking to Catherine Plano because we're going to be talking about personal growth, because personal growth, leadership, understanding your own self is the precursor to achieving business goals. So, Catherine, welcome to the show. How are you going?
I'm awesome, and thank you for having me on the show.
I'm super delighted that you're able to join us. I was just talking off air that you're mixing some similar circles. So I've been seeing your name pop up quite a few times, and I've obviously gone through and had a look at all the stuff that you do. So I can't wait to get into it. Before we do actually get into the meat and potatoes of what I wanted to talk to you about specifically, I'm curious to understand, you do a lot of work in leadership, understanding the mind, helping business owners and entrepreneurs perform at a higher level so that their business ultimately performs at a higher level. I'm just curious to ask you, how did you find yourself in that line of work?
Oh, I think it goes back to, I was in corporate myself. So if I go back to 25 plus years ago, I myself started in corporate. And I think I gradually was climbing the corporate ladder. And I think the higher you get to the inner corporate level, the higher you get to, I think there's also there's a lot more responsibility at hand. And it always, to me, all the stuff that didn't go right always led back to the leader. And, you know, I always say that people leave leaders, they don't leave companies. So when things don't go right, it goes back to working with that individual. And that's what attracted me, because then I realized that that was the piece that was missing. A lot of people would, you know, come into these organizations and try to shift the culture, but weren't working with those individuals that were leading the culture. So that's how I got into it. I was in it in the first place.
Wow. Okay. So what was the transition out of corporate life and into, I suppose, the entrepreneurial space? What was the genesis or the impetus for that?
For me, I think it was like just the whole, I felt there was a lack of freedom. There was all these policies, procedures, everything was, you know, structured. And for me, I just thought if we keep doing the same old, we'll just keep getting the same results. So I planned to take the big leap and leave the corporate world, but I did plan 12 months ahead. So what I did is I made sure that I saved enough money that I could at least survive for 12 months. And I gave myself a window of 12 months to give it a go. What would that look like, feel like? And it was very scary. A lot of my stuff was coming up. So I had to do all the deep work myself. And I kept saying to myself, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen? Well, we'll just go back to a job. But it was the most scariest, but the most rewarding time ever.
I think that's actually really important, because every single one of us has fears, every single one of us has doubts, and no doubt there'll be someone listening to this podcast going, oh my goodness me, I'm about to decide to open a practice, or I'm about to expand, or I'm about to move, or whatever. So let's just talk about that fear, because I think it's a real sensation. People experience it in lots of different ways. How do you acknowledge the fear and move through it? What is that process? You spoke about doing deep work. I'm just curious to understand what that looks like in practical terms.
So I look at fear as false evidence appearing real. So it's not real. It's a figment of your imagination. If you've actually physically experienced it, so for example, still working through it, by the way, I have a fear of flying. But in 1991, I had an experience when we had emergency landing where all the bags are popping out, screaming, you name it. It was like one of those things, the horror show that you would see on TV. Well, I experienced that. So I physically went through that. So hence that every time I was sitting in a plane and we'd feel the turbulence, of course, that would take me back to that significant time. But most of the time we carry fear because sometimes it's fear that's not even our own fear. So it could be imposed fear. And sometimes it's fear that's just made up. I always say when you feel the fear, lean into it. We do completely the opposite. When we feel fear, we run away from it and we don't move or lean into it. And I think it's really important to lean into the fear, because when we walk through that fear or lean into the fear, on the other side of that is courage. And we've all done that. There's times where we've all had an experience where we may have been shaking our boots a little bit and done it anyway. So, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. And what has that left you feeling in the end? Well, there's a sense of pride, a sense of like, I feel brave, I feel like courageous now. So when I feel fear, I always go into my heart, because courage, the word courage in French, the word cœur is heart. And so when you feel fear, go into your heart. And what it does, it dissipates that feeling throughout your body. And everyone feels fear in a different way. Some people have shaky knees, some people feel nauseous in the stomach. So I was like, go into the heart and walk through that fear and what's on the other side of that, because you can't have one without the other.
Yeah, totally. And you spoke about the false evidence part, you know, false evidence appearing real. And so I guess coming back to your story, when you were transitioning from corporate into entrepreneurialism, coming back to the false evidence part is just trying to, I guess, from your perspective, going through that, getting the reality, what you're doing, the detective thinking, what's the real thing? What plans have I put in place? What are the contingencies I have? What's the risk mitigation I've put in place? So I guess as you made that leap yourself, it wasn't just a leap of faith. There was some serious planning, some strategy, some thought, and some real rigor behind that, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you really need to, and I think that's what we were talking about, you really need to unpack the fear. So I think that with fear, it's such a broad topic, isn't it? I mean, fear of what? It could be fear of failure, fear of success. Believe it or not, people do fear success, and I'm putting my hand up for that one. It could be fear of disappointment, whatever that may be. And I think that when you unpack fear, first you've got to really be specific. What is that fear? Like, get down to the reality. Give it one word. And then how do you face your fear? Like, look at it face on, start looking at, you know, what is it protecting me from? What would happen if I hang on to this fear? So I really unpack the fear. I open up the fear box and really unpack it so that it loosens the boundaries of the fear to allow me to move forward.
Yeah. I think that's something that for some people feel a little bit counterintuitive. As you said earlier, lean into that fear rather than run away from it. And I think, as you say, if you get through that, there's courage on the other side. So I think that's a really critical thing. You spoke about in your corporate life the concept of leaders leading leaders. And I wanted to just explore that, because I think there's the whole topic of leadership is a big topic as well, clearly, just like the topic of fear. But I wanted to get your views on leading leaders and how to develop leaders, because the sort of person that listens to this podcast is someone who typically is either contemplating a business, or usually they're already in a business and they're looking to scale up. And so they're trying to transition from being an operator in a business where they're, you know, self-employed to all intents and purposes, to building and leading a team who can deliver great care on their behalf. And of course, what that means is they've got to be able to sharpen up their own leadership skills, but equally to move beyond that key person dependency to develop other leaders within the team. So I wanted to get some insights from you, from your experience. What do the best leaders do to engender leadership in others?
Oh, love that question. I always say a great leader breeds leaders. And I think the way to go about it, and this is just from my experience over the last 25 years and the work that I do, is if you want to lead a team and breed leaders, you need for them to stand in their own leadership style. And what I mean by that is, quite often a lot of the leaders that I work with, they think they need to have all the answers. They go in there and they tell people what to do and how to do it and so forth. In actual fact, the leadership role is so much more different than going in there full steam ahead and command a team on how they should go about a project. The best way is to create the collaboration and the inclusion, is that you can go in there and actually ask them for their insight. Even with my own team, I find it so much easier when we have to, let's say, I don't like to call them problems, but let's say we have to solve an opportunity. I don't have all the answers. And if we set a meeting where everyone can come in with a solution and we all put our ideas into a brainstorming session, then everyone's feeling valued. There's a lot of research now that clearly shows that the number one reason people are not feeling engaged in any organization is because they don't feel valued. So they don't feel heard and they're not seen. So if only we can make our team members or leaders feel heard and seen and valued, then we're actually giving them the courage to be a leader within themselves. And I think that also by incorporating your team, getting them to come up with your ideas is so much more collaborative in that approach. But not only that, I always look at, say, Google, for example. Google, they say to their team or their leaders or their employees, if you've got any ideas, please come and see us with these ideas. Put together a bit of a plan, and if we like the idea and we value what you have as a project, we will invest money and time into it. So they basically encourage their leaders to come up with their own ideas, and this is how Google keeps coming up with these different products, because they have that collaborative approach. It's not about they're the company and they coming up with all these innovative ideas and creative ideas. They're actually getting that from their people. So I think if we be more of service as a leader, rather than try to tell people what to do, because, you know, I love the brain, and from brain research, you can see the brain contracts when somebody tells you what to do. However, if you actually ask someone, how would you go about it if you were in my shoes? How would you go about it if you were the CEO of this company? It's amazing how much more you can learn and how it expands your horizon, and you'll go about your day to day in a different way. Does that help?
I think that's absolute gold. And I really, again, I love the idea of collaboration. And just to share a little insight with you around some dentists, and maybe this is me looking in the mirror a little bit, but as dentists, I think that's a really important thing, because a lot of us, when we're at university, we're trained to be in control. You know, we control our domain, and that can spill over into the other areas of the business. So even though clinically we want to be in control, when it comes to the day-to-day operations, it's a bit of a mindset shift to be able to say, I've got control over my clinical work, but I need to be able to give up some of that control and will not feel the need to control others outside of that, those four walls where the actual surgery is happening. So I guess what I wanted to ask you is, how do you context shift where you need to be in control to where you're much more open to collaboration and handing over control to others? How do you switch gears in that area?
Great question. I always look at working with people's strengths, and there's a lot of research around that as well. And when people work with their strengths, they naturally catapult forward and get stronger and stronger. So what I do is definitely, and you can do this, you can do some strength-based assessments. I know the Gallup group have some, but I like to get people to say, give me six of your strengths. What is your talents? Talk me through those. And what we do is, this is how we do it. We actually allow those that are better than each other. For example, I'm very much an innovator and a creative. I'm not great at detail. It's not my default position, but it's something that I do have to focus and have everything switched off so that I get into it. I have other team members who love data and detail. So when it comes to data and detail, I give that to the other person who thrives on it. So that's how I let go of my power, because I know it's not a power. Because the thing is, people fear giving power away because, well, I see it in two ways. One, it depends where you're at, by the way. So in a large corporation, for example, some leaders fear giving their power away because fear of somebody outshining them, or the power makes them feel superior. So therefore, they then use the power to actually feel valued, if that makes sense. So then they're the type of people that will command and control an environment, tell people what to do. Whereas if you go into that mindset about collaboration, it's about who's best at doing this and who's best at doing that. That's how you let go of it, because then you know it's better for not just your business, but actually the team as a whole, because then everyone is thriving and working at their best self.
I think that's, again, I think that's a really profound insight. And I'm going to, my observation, and I'm very happy for you to correct me on this, Catherine, because this is the space you work in, but it's one of those things that intellectually it sounds so easy, but to actually put into practice, there's a whole lot of stuff to work through around that, right? Because it's, for me, listening to that, I go, yeah, I totally understand that, but it's a simple but not easy kind of thing, if that makes sense. So how, what sort of things would you say to someone who is going, yeah, I get it, I understand it, that makes sense, but I'm worried that if I hand it over, there's a mistake that's going to be made and I'm going to get sucked back into it again and all, whatever. But what's the general thought around that, so that people can collaborate in a way that they feel comfortable with and knowing that they're okay, that everything is still, the world's going to turn on its axis still?
Yeah. So it would be really me then unpacking what's stopping you and what's the block. And this is what, you know, sometimes people naturally will sabotage, you know, like I was saying before, you know, when I have a fear of success, then I will sabotage success every time it comes my way. So sometimes it could be lots of things. So if they're sabotaging, it could be something that a belief, maybe a perception or a story they have about if you trust someone, because trust is a big, it's all about trust, right? And not everybody trusts everybody 100%. I mean, there's this belief, some people believe that, you know, hang on, they need to earn my trust first. Some people don't trust anybody at all. And then sometimes people trust everybody until proven wrong. So I would really unpack, you know, what's getting in the way, what's stopping you from collaborating and having a look, is there something sabotaging you? And it could be as simple as that maybe some time ago, they did somebody or allowed somebody to step into the, you know, their environment, and that person broke their trust, and therefore they had this story about I can't trust anybody anymore. And that was probably a significant emotional event that took place even 10, 20 years ago that no longer serves them today. And it's not until we unpack and do the deep work that when this comes up, I didn't realize that this would still have an impact on me today. Then we look at the, you know, the, how do we work through the trust model as well? It's a, you've got to give trust to earn trust, because we know now with research, with body language, okay, if let's say you and I, Jess, work together and we're just role playing, right? So let's say I don't trust you. You automatically, Jess, will pick up on my nonverbal communication without me saying a word. And therefore, if you know that I don't trust you, how do you think you are going to respond to me as a leader?
Well, totally. I'm not necessarily going to take what you say at face value. I'm going to perhaps think there's an agenda. I may not follow through on the things that are required in my role. We're not going to engage with one another. All of those sorts of things. It's going to be difficult.
Yeah, and it's through body language. Body language is 55% of our communication, which means this. Before we even utter a word, everyone around us will be able to understand or read what's going on at that deeper level.
Isn't that funny? Because I understand, and I'm aware of that stat, and it's great. Where does intuition fit into that? Is that part of just perception? Where does that come into it?
Oh, intuition, just another form of intelligence, right? You've heard about there's some people, you know, there's the brain, there's the mindset, the gut and the heart. I mean, there's intuition. I mean, some people just get a gut feeling about someone. And I always look at it this way. When I have resistance towards anything around me, and especially somebody, I know I need to lean in because I need to learn something from this person. Because the way the mind works, I don't know if you've heard of perception is projection. So what we perceive as our reality, we project into our environment. And therefore, if I am projecting, it's like I'm also, and this is what I call our blind spots. This is where we need to shine the light on our blind spots. When we are feeling that resistance, we must lean in and go, what is the lesson here? Why am I feeling this resistance? Which is fantastic. Resistance is awesome, because I always say that's the work we need to focus on.
We've spoken a little bit about self-sabotage and leaning into that resistance. Where do biases fit into that as well? Yeah, unconscious bias in that scenario.
gosh, unconscious bias plays out all the time. I mean, it depends on your culture, your values, your beliefs, your how you've been brought up. I have sat down with some HR managers when they're actually doing some interviews for certain roles, and it's really interesting how they'll go, I really like that person. I'm going, okay. Talk me through what exactly about that person did you really like? A lot of the times it's something they could relate to. Either they're from the same culture, they lived in the same area, they visited the same country, they might have the same name. But it works on the flip of that as well. It may be that unconscious bias will play out when you're interviewing somebody because maybe, and please forgive me if there's any Peters out there, but let's say I grew up with a Peter at school and he bullied me and therefore I didn't like Peter. So every time I come into contact with a Peter, I will have a natural resistance. And my unconscious bias will say, because remember, your unconscious bias is also there to keep you safe and protect you, will say, Catherine, remember what happened to the last time you actually befriended a Peter. So it's playing out all the time.
Wow, that's really incredible, isn't it? Because all these little memories from life get locked into the vault, and maybe we're not necessarily conscious of those memories at a very detailed level, but those biases certainly show up, as you say, every single day. So we've got this storage capacity for all the memories, all the lessons, all the hurts, all the joys as well throughout life, and it seems that they come out quite commonly.
And I think that's why it's really important to challenge your thinking. Don't believe all your thoughts, because it's sometimes, like I said, it could be imposed. It could be something that you experience. And, you know, I like to ask my question, my mind, where does that come from? And when I get stuck on something, I like to go, what else does that mean? So that I really open up Pandora's box and really unpack, like, where does this belief come from? And I don't think we do that enough. I think we live in this fast-paced world and we just all need to slow down and really start evaluating our inner thoughts, feelings, biases, all of that stuff.
Amen to that. Ladies and gents, if you've just joined our show, we are having a conversation with Catherine Pilano from catherinepilano.com.au, and we're talking all about the inner game. And I think the inner game is really important. And I have a view that if you want to grow your business, first you must grow yourself, because business growth is secondary to personal growth. And I am yet to see a business outgrow its leader. Catherine, in that context of thinking about business growth and the personal growth being the forerunner to business growth, what are the common mistakes or missteps that you see business owners, entrepreneurs make in terms of trying to set a goal and then perhaps some of these things like biases or self-sabotage coming up? What are the common mistakes in all of that?
Yeah, I think that a lot of entrepreneurs that I work with go into business with an idea, and they just, and that idea is their goal. So they then set up this business and they've got just this end in mind, which is fine. Absolutely. Goals help you get to where you need to get to. But I always say it's the journey. So sometimes, I truly believe that's why you hear that the stats, like businesses don't last 12 months. They go into a business without doing the deep work first. And I find that a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners that I work with, they'll say things like, I want more customers, I want more money, I want more exposure, all of that kind of stuff. And it's okay to be focused on the external, and they start comparing themselves with others and how is it that others, but the ones that are successful are the ones that have done the deep work. And a lot of the times I find that we have money blocks, and money blocks could be as simple as, I mean, I can share this, my story. I came to Australia in the 70s and I saw my mother and father work really, really hard. And so my belief was that you had to work really, really hard to get anywhere in life. And I see that in my family. I see that with my brother, my sister, and myself. We all work really, really, really hard to the point where I actually experienced burnout, which isn't pleasant. But I had to then change my belief system. And that's when the deep work, I mean, to me, it was a blessing in disguise, because then it made me realize that I was sabotaging money coming into my business, because I didn't feel that I was worthy of receiving money. So there's always this uncomfortable feeling of receiving money because I'm a people pleaser. I still am working on that. I'm getting better, by the way. And also this belief of having to work so hard, I had to change my mindset to, I need to work smarter than harder. And so there is a step-by-step process, which I'm happy to share with your listeners as a link or a form, or do it now, how to get rid of those sabotaging thoughts, especially around money. So I don't know how you would like to do that. I can send it.
So what if we do a bit of a quiz in the show notes? If we could grab a link for that, because I know that people will want to spend some time doing it properly. There'll be a bunch of people driving in the car right now going, oh my goodness, I'm trying to scribble this down. So let's play it safe. And how about we put that link in there for them to download? Really interesting though, to hear your childhood experience is really quite fascinating, because my own childhood experiences, I grew up in a family where certainly money was tight. And I realized at a very young age that my mum and dad, who I love dearly, but I totally didn't want their life. And it's quite funny, because I've spent my entire life trying not to be them, as much as I love them in certain elements of their life, that is, just in the economic and financial sense. And it's really funny, because sometimes those things serve you, and it's a double-edged sword. Sometimes those things serve you, and other times they can hinder you. And so that's the cliche, of course, it's the iceberg, isn't it? It's what's below the waterline that you can really need to think about and do the deep work, as you say, to move forward beyond that.
So true. I think that's true. I mean, you can actually work, like, see it very clearly. So I had to be in a situation where I experienced burnout to then realize that there's all this underlying stuff, like you said, below the iceberg, to actually do the deep work. And you're doing that without the burnout. So you're seeing, okay, I don't want to repeat this pattern, because it is a pattern. Everything's a pattern when it comes to brain-based coaching. Everything is a pattern. So you've actually worked out the pattern, found a way, or decoded your pattern to do it completely differently. But not many people do that, Jess. That's an exception in itself.
Yeah, isn't that funny? So some of those experiences stay with you from young age, and you make conscious decisions. And it's funny, I reflect on it with my wife sometimes, and as I said, sometimes it really serves you and other times it can hinder you. So I'm curious to ask you, in the work that you do, and I know you work with a lot of business leaders, business owners, and in terms of those that want to grow their business, we spoke about, you know, wanting more customers, more money, whatever it is, but understanding that there's potentially some self-sabotage that's going on there. What sort of things have surprised you in your journey when you're working with people? What sort of things you kind of go, wow, I wouldn't have picked that, or I wouldn't have thought that would show up, or wow, this happens a lot, that surprises me?
It varies. So when I'm dealing with leaders in corporations, it's completely different. So when you're talking about leaders in corporation, it's more so about why they are showing up the way that they're showing up. So it's doing that deep work. I think for them, it's more like an epiphany, an insight that they didn't know they had to do the deep work to become a better leader. What they thought is they had to do all these courses to become a better leader and apply, and that's all done and fixed. Not wrong. So it's actually then when you do the work. I remember somebody shared a really, this leader, very resilient leader, talked about how she grew up without a mother, and the experiences that she actually experienced as a young girl. For me, I was like, no wonder you are so resilient, because all of those experiences that you experienced led to you to who you are today. So absolutely, sometimes it's not till you have those conversations, you hear about somebody's background or their upbringing, and then you go, wow, no wonder. So that was kind of, I'm not sure if I'm answering the questions. From a leadership point of view, it's that. From a business point of view, once again, people just automatically think they focus externally on their business, not doing that inner work. So when the aha moment for them is when they find out they're either comparing themselves to others, so they're focused. They might have somebody they want to be like, and they just focus on that person and try to be like them, you know, like copycats, and there's copycats everywhere. But what happens is they're actually disempowering themselves by comparing themselves to others. And you see that even comparing themselves to others, and this is dangerous, I see this in a lot of entrepreneurs, they invest in money in the wrong areas of their business because they want to be like that other individual.
There's a certain sadness around that for me. I hear that. And I totally understand the part of a role model, and you know, there are certainly people who I look up to and draw inspiration from. But in my early days, in my 20s, there were people I tried to emulate, and it felt like I was wearing someone else's shoes. It just it was weird and it was uncomfortable, and ultimately I had to change shoes because I was trying to be someone that I wasn't. I mean, I think the point you're trying to make is to draw inspiration but not copycat. And it's just when I see people copycatting, I just feel a certain sense of sadness because there's some authenticity that we're not getting to see because they're trying to be something else.
Yeah, and that's that whole keeping up with the Joneses. You know, I didn't even know what that meant until I actually unpacked that in itself. And it's true, that happens a lot, keeping up with the Joneses. People, it's all about comparing themselves to others rather than, like you said, finding that inner inspiration. And that goes back to why you're doing what you're doing. What's your purpose? Get down to the specific, why is that? And I think that people go, I know what I want to do. I know how to do it, but I don't know why I'm doing it.
Yeah, and it's got to be more than just make money, right?
Oh, absolutely. And the why is the driver, the unconscious motivator. If you can, as a leader, and we all do this, we can talk about this is what's going to happen, how we're going to go about it, but we don't talk about the why. And the why is, if you go straight into the why, this is why we need to do it, this is how we're going to do it, and this is what the outcome will be. If you flip it on its head, you'll get more people on board than the other way around.
Totally. Look, a few minutes ago, you mentioned about slowing down and quietening down and shutting out the noise. And I wanted to just explore that for a moment because I actually think that in today's digital world, we're all on our phones probably more than we should be. Probably checking Facebook, I don't know how many times a day. I heard a stat somewhere, I can't remember what it is exactly, but it was mind-boggling and a little bit frightening. So I wanted to ask you about creating space for reflection, contemplation, meditation, if that's the thing. What do you see as that, or see that as, in terms of developing one's own self?
Yeah, probably not the best person to ask that because I'm a bit of a Nazi when it comes to that. I actually get up at 4:30 every morning. I meditate for half an hour and then I exercise in the morning and then I'll journal. I stay clear away from social media. So I get somebody that does my social media for me. And I think it's also because I'd experienced burnout and I know that what I need, I know what I need to focus on. And I know not to spend my energy on the areas that will suck my energy. So, and I'm not telling everyone to get up at 4:30 in the morning, but definitely when I run my classes, I do say this, invest 5 minutes a day with you. Move away from your working environment, sit under a tree, sit in the car, wherever that may be, make that space for you, 5 minutes a day. And if you can do that for 21 days, sit with yourself and actually connect with yourself. What am I feeling right now? And what am I thinking right now? And really, like, be present. And I know mindfulness gets spoken and bantered around a lot, but this is a form of mindfulness, is just to be present with you. Not think about, because we tend to be so future-focused, thinking about what next, what about what now? And I think that if we can do that 5 minutes a day, and then I like to, in the evening, I always practice gratitude. I always pick three things that I'm grateful for the day, because what that does, it actually helps you being present rather than being focused on all the havings. I wish I had more clients. I wish I had more money. I wish I had more success. If you're being grateful with what you have now, it changes your mindset.
I love that. And in fact, listeners to our show will know, I've mentioned this previously, every night at dinner, that's what we do with our kids as well. And I think it's a really good thing for kids in today's age because it's easy, again, to get caught up in comparison and to want this and want that. And I think you're absolutely right. If you can practice the what now rather than the what next, I think that's really, really powerful. It's, again, I think it's one of those things that some people pick up and really make a profound shift in their life with. And for those listening, I'd really encourage you to do that. It's been tremendously powerful in my own life, and it sounds like it has been in yours too, Catherine.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, you know, there's this, because I experience, and still to this day, is anxiety. And I think that I remember once working with someone and they said to me that it's anxiety has become the norm now. And especially with the entrepreneurs, anxiety is when you're too future-paced, you're stuck in the future. And so that made me practice the being present and being more mindful. And to be honest, Jess, it has changed my life. because it is a lot of entrepreneurs always think about what next, and they're always in the future. Like, how do I? Not only that, because everything's so fast paced, and especially with technology, is constantly moving. You've got to keep up with the times, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's like you're constantly in the future.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think you're right. It's time to slow down, give yourself that gift of 5 minutes a day for 21 days and just be. And I think that's really good. And as we're coming up to a Christmas period at the moment, and so I think there's obviously going to be some time for contemplation and reflection over that. But just as a daily habit, one of those little success habits, I think that 5 minutes a day, everyone can find 5 minutes. And I think it's going to make a tremendous difference. Catherine, you've been incredibly generous with your time today. And I want to firstly say thank you, because you've got a lot on, and I'm tremendously grateful that you've taken the time out of your day to come and hang with us and to share such good advice and wonderful wisdom. As we finish up our conversation, if you were to leave the audience with one or two or even three keys to getting the most out of themselves, to either developing their own leadership, understanding their biases, whatever that topic that we've touched on you think might be helpful, what would be one or two or three little keys or tips you'd like the audience to really focus in on?
I love that. I think the first one for me is spend time with yourself. Yeah, connect with yourself, because we are so disconnected from ourselves because so focused on external environmental things. So definitely spend time daily, a practice. And I think also the other thing is still the mind as often as you can. And the way to do that, you can use your own, I tell people, use your own words. And there's so many mantras out there that you can use, but use your own word or your own sentence. And I think it's important to still the mind, because it depends on what research you look up these days, but we process anything between 65 to 75,000 thoughts a day. And most of those thoughts are repeating thoughts, and they're not inspiring or very empowering for us individuals. So I think also connect with your thinking. And the last one I think is really important, to spend time with loved ones. I see this play out so often, that people in business, leaders, entrepreneurs, they work so hard. And when we really talk about values, like, what do you value the most? Family comes up all the time. Family comes up. But they sacrifice family for business. And I think that spending time with your loved ones, because it not only is it healthy for you and your mindset, but it's healthy with your for your relationships. But you never know. You know, I always look at, I do this exercise with some of my classes where they go ahead of time at a birthday, their 80th birthday, and they have people coming up to them. And when they come out of this visualization that we do, quite often they're really sad, because they realize that either their partner or their parents are no longer there. And it helps them put things into perspective that, you know, I should be spending more time with my mom or my dad. Why am I so work focused? And I know my mom used to say that all the time. She goes, even though, Catherine, you have moved closer, I never see you because you always work so hard. It's so true. So I think spend time with loved ones.
I think that's wonderful advice. And it is certainly the season for it, of course. As we're recording this close to Christmas, I really hope everyone has the opportunity to spend time with themselves and their loved ones over the holiday period. Catherine, you have, as I said a moment ago, been incredibly generous. And from all of us here at the Savvy Dentist Podcast, I want to say thank you. And for the listeners, if you'd like to find out more about Catherine and what she does, I'd really recommend you check out her site, catherineplano.com.au. There's an incredible array of resources there, some wonderful articles and blogs and so on, and we will put a link to a resource in the show notes for you as well. But from all of us here, Catherine, thank you once again.
Oh, thank you, Jess. And there is a lot of free stuff on the website as well. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I've really enjoyed this.
Oh, cheers. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.